Hello and welcome back to the Chris Yeh podcast. I am, as always, Chris Yeh, joined by one of my most frequent guests, my dear friend, Tim Taylor.
Thank you. I didn't know that, actually. I want to set the record on your podcast the way you set the record on my podcast. I didn't know it was a frequent one.
You're a frequent one. I don't actually know if you're the most frequent visitor because there's a few other folks like Dr. Ken that's been on many times.
Yes. Okay, so you didn't say most frequent, you said frequent.
Yes, I said one of the most frequent.
One of the most frequent. Okay, fair enough.
But the reason we've convened for this particular podcast is I get very curious about things sometimes. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I'm most curious about, no surprise, is myself. And sometimes I have emotions or reactions that I don't quite understand. Uh-huh. And when that happens, well, you know, the unexamined life is not worth living. And so I examine it because I want my life to be worth living.
That's true.
And there was something very strange that happened in some of the podcasts that we have recorded together, either for your podcast,
right,
the Father-Daughter Dance, or for our joint podcast, Real Men Cry and Laugh.
Yes.
And that is that I have a strangely negative and instinctive reaction to the term holding space.
Yes.
Very first time I heard it came up in our conversation. Now I've heard it separately from our conversations, but every time I hear the term, I get an instinctive and negative reaction to it.
Just so everybody knows, that's the proper way to say it. Because you first said negative and instinctive. Actually, instinctive and negative is the perfect way to put it.
That's why I corrected.
Which is so atypical. And the, how long we've known each other, like over 20 years, like it's just not typical with you with when we have our conversations.
Yes, no, exactly. Which just shows you how disturbed I am by the whole situation, which is very strange because very little disturbs me.
Very little.
And so we are convened today to try to examine this. Now, we're going to let you in on a little secret. We already had a long conversation about this a few days ago where we eventually figured out, I have such a negative reaction to it. But we're going to explore the question anyways in hopes of bringing you guys along on a journey of discovery, which hopefully will not drive you all away.
If they haven't yet. But I think what's worth at least bringing out is that of the many gifts you bring into my life, there are some gifts that I bring into your life, which is I am very conversant and comfortable sharing, listening, talking about the word feelings. It's just been a gift for me over the course of my life. And it has been nourished and nurtured. It's certainly helped by the fact that I have a daughter that really made a big difference for me. But it's just like, you know, even when I was a kid, there was that popular song, Feelings, of whom I can't think of who sang it.
Feelings.
That's exactly. Whoa, whoa, whoa. They would do that. And it's like I feel seen and weird at the same time that I really like this song. And the conversation that we did indeed have the other night was also one of several that we've had about sharing feelings and the concept of holding space. And it was so interesting to me that you had a different way of, you had a different set of words that you appreciated that to me had an instinctive and troubled reaction to it in the world that we're talking about right now, which is in essence, in this case, listening to someone talk about their feelings and what were your words? Cause there were a couple of them, if I remember the way you talked
about
it.
So what I said, what I said is I don't understand why we use this term when you can just simply say, listen empathetically and attentively without judgment.
Well,
and
that
your
was
point.
Yeah.
And your point was you felt that where does the judgment come from? Why would listening empathetically involve judgment?
Correct.
And I said, the judgment comes in the play, comes in the form of people reinforcing folks' feelings. So the you go girl approach, as opposed to listening empathetically without judgment.
I hear you. I want to dial it back a little bit though, because your first position were the words active listening.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Sorry. That was the previous conversation. We didn't even talk about that. But active listening,
so let's start from that.
Which is a term of art from the therapeutic profession, right? It is a medical term. It is a term used by psychologists and psychiatrists. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And it is an old term that has been around for many, many decades. Whereas yep. Hold Space, as we've just discovered, comes from a single blog post in 2015.
Wait a minute. You didn't tell the full story of active listening. Who, what group co-opted, like what part of our world co-opted active listening?
I'm not entirely certain what
companies, corporate.
Oh,
that is just it's just corporate speak, active listening. And it's confusing to me.
It's not confusing at all. The reason that it's confusing is because those corporations use the term incorrectly.
Correct. That's what I'm saying. So they essentially co-opted it. And so I'm troubled with it because it has that corporate background to it. And it also, just the idea of putting the word active makes it feel like I'm in action. When in fact, when I listen to someone speak about their feelings, I'm a little more, I don't have as much a reaction to what the second set of words you came up with. But the idea of active listening was just, a little abhorrent to me.
So let's talk about this because I think it really has to do with the context in which you first encounter a word. And I think that is one of the things that we haven't discussed, but which I do want to discuss.
Okay.
So I encountered the term active listening in the context of my peer counseling training at Stanford. This was in the early 1990s.
Okay.
It was done by the psychology department at Stanford as part of the Bridge Peer Counseling Program. And you take a class mm-hmm. on peer counseling that teaches you the skill of active listening. Uh-huh. And so I came across active listening as a term in the context of academic and medical term of the art. Now, it sounds like you encountered active listening in some sort of corporate setting. I don't know how you encountered it because I've never encountered it in a corporate setting.
You've never encountered active listening as a term in a corporate setting?
Correct.
Wow. That's the only place I've encountered it.
You remember, I've never worked for a large corporation.
That's true. I was just going to say that. That actually has to be pointed out because it might not be part of the thing. But you know, the thing is you're even saying you learned about it from academia and medical world.
Yes.
And the world that we're talking about is so much more inclusive and broad. It's not a DSM thing that we're talking about here. But
that should be the basis, right? The medical world and the academic world should be the basis, and then we can broaden from there.
How many academics and scientists, what would you call them? Academics and medical people?
Medical practitioners.
Medical practitioners. What percentage of them know how to talk about their feelings and listen to them? Let's start with the first one.
The percentage of them who are studying this topic is very high. That's like saying academics and medical practitioners are the people we should turn to for cancer diagnosis. And you're saying, well, how many academics can diagnose cancer?
That's fair. All I'm saying is I have plenty of academic friends and medical friends, practitioners. Well, I have some that can talk about or share their feelings, but that's really the essence of what we're talking about. All right.
Yes and no.
Okay.
So you're talking about sharing feelings.
Yes.
I'm talking about allowing someone to share feelings with them.
Is there a difference between listening to sharing feelings and allowing someone to share their feelings?
No. You were saying sharing feelings as opposed to listening. So I thought you were talking about academics being unable to express their feelings versus academics being unable to listen to someone else express their feelings.
I happen to think that academics and medical practitioners are not that much different than the general population and that there's a very small percentage that can do either.
It depends on if they've been trained.
Correct.
So my point is there is no reason we should privilege folks who are untrained who claim to be able to speak and listen about feelings versus people who are trained. Obviously, we should not privilege those who have academic degrees but have no training.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I don't have any degree in talking about it, listening to feelings. I'm not the best at it, and I'm really good at it. And so
I don't have a degree, but I've received formal training in the form of multiple courses. Mm-hmm. And I believe that it qualifies me to speak and listen about feelings more than the vast majority of people.
Wow.
And we are coming from two different approaches.
That is a CV drop the mic moment for you that you think that happens to be the case. But here's what we both agree on. Let's at least start there.
Yes.
First of all, for anybody listening, we love each other. Like, I know that for 100% certain.
Can't they tell that from the conversation?
I don't know. But it actually, like, we've only done, I don't know how many we've done. We've done two dozen podcasts together. The truth is we've had like 1,000 podcasts. There just happen to be phone conversations. But
alas, for all that wasted content lost to the world. So sad.
Which was the conversation this week. We were texting each other. We ended up picking up the phone. We're wasting all this. We want people to hear this. Where we fundamentally agree, yes, fundamentally, is the ability to listen to another person talk about their feelings is an essential piece of the, and I don't know how much you agree with me on this, but I think it's true. It's an essential piece of the point that is leading our civilization. I think it's more important than anything else you can tell me about personally.
Well, I wouldn't go quite that far.
I know you wouldn't. You know,
things like being able to solve climate change so that we don't go extinct and preventing AI from taking over, those are pretty important too.
But here's the deal with both of those topics. Mm-hmm. Both of those topics include feelings. And if you don't have the capacity to talk about and share feelings, we can debate about that particular thing.
Yes, and another podcast. And everything that we do requires oxygen, and that doesn't make oxygen preeminent over everything else. But what I will agree with you on, before you took it slightly too far for me to go with you, was that feelings are incredibly important. Yeah. The ability to listen empathetically and non-judgmentally is super important and sadly rare in our society.
Yeah, it is rare. It is rare.
The lack of this training, the lack of this experience is killing us. It is literally killing us because people are not able to express their feelings and they are suffering health-wise, both mm-hmm. mental and physical, and it leads to conflict and misunderstanding. Yes. And this is a tragic, tragic thing.
Yeah, and I'm 100% in agreement with you there. And you said active listening has been a concept for how long?
Well, I don't know for sure, but I ballpark. Know that I was trained on it at least 30 years ago, and it was old then. It came from the 1970s.
Okay, got it. So what we can both agree on is active listening has not helped this dynamic, because I doubt it's any different than it used to be. So let's just at least agree that we both agree also that the percentage of...
Let's clarify your statement. What you're saying is...
I thought I could get by without you doing that.
The term active listening has not led to a change in the world where active listening is practiced by all.
Correct. Or you forget about all, like a good percentage of the people. Right. But like, again, it's... To a degree, it's semantics, but to a degree, what I want everybody to know, and I hope everybody listening, I'd be curious to hear if you want to send Chris messages. Everybody knows Chris. I would just love to know everybody's listening. It's like, how comfortable are you sharing with your feelings, and how comfortable are you listening to someone share about their feelings? And I think the percentage is low. And so this idea that, and you are so right, because the inability to express them has all kinds of negative consequences, creates division, health issues, just misunderstanding, resentments, all that kind of stuff. So anyway, so when we were talking the other day, you had said to listen, empathetically listen without judgment.
Correct.
Which is a very long sentence, including two words that are very vague. Empathy, judgment. Right? What we need
empathy, so empathetic. I mm-hmm. think people understand what that word means. And judgment, well, I guess it's true that judgment can be can mean different things, but generally in this context, I think that the meaning is clear.
Okay, so give me a one sentence meaning of what the judgment, lack of judgment means.
What it means is mm-hmm. that you are not evaluating, you are not judging, you are not the person who is in charge of deciding whether something is right or wrong.
Okay.
You're not delivering a positive opinion, you're not delivering a negative opinion.
Okay. Does that include, I can't believe Tim's 55 years old, and he's still talking about these things that make him cry now and again, right? So you're not also not judging where I am on the,
that's right,
on the growth spectrum. Yeah, yeah. So
that's right.
So right or wrong, progress, if I trust you enough talking about something that's a little, that's dark or whatever, that I don't talk to a lot of people, right? Because part of it is definitely, trusting someone that yes. I can tell them something, just like the baseline, I can tell them something sensitive. Yeah. And, I just think judgment is mostly associated with like, I'm better than you kind of stuff. So maybe that is.
It could be I'm better than you, or it could just be, I think that that sucks. I think that you suck. I mean, that's what people fear. That's why we fear a judgmental conversation. Nobody ever says, you know what? I'd like to talk to someone about my problems who's really judgmental.
Right. Right. You're not going to get me on your side, but we're on the same side. Like we're on the same side.
We are absolutely on the same side. And by the way, one of the things you discovered for this call is a Psychology Today piece just from this year.
Yeah.
About holding space, which taught us for the first time that hold space comes from a 2015 blog post, but also provided a 4-point definition of holding space.
It did.
And I think that we completely agree on this 4-point definition. What we don't agree on is the words to shorten it to.
Right. But let's just, I agree. And let's just lock in on one thing.
Yes.
We both agree that it's that not a huge percentage of people are comfortable talking about their feelings or listening to them. And what we both agree is we want more people to do it. That's sort of simple.
Absolutely.
Okay? And
but let me, I would love to read through the four different points.
Go for it.
And I will hopefully it will be useful to folks.
Yeah.
The first is to be fully present without distractions. So in other words, you are focused on them. They are the person that you are really present with. And it just means that you're really paying attention to them. And it makes the good point, by the way, that you can do this without just staring into each other's eyes. You could be on a walk. You could be throwing a ball back and forth in a classic American cliche.
Right.
The second is that you create a safe and accepting environment where the person can speak freely without fear of judgment. And that is the thing, the fear of judgment. I love that phrase.
Okay.
The third is to listen effectively. Now, this is a little puzzling to me
because
it talks about how, holding space involves listening attentively. And I'm like, well, effectively, attentively, why not just say attentively? I mean, it feels like you just defined it with a different word. They do point out there are certain pitfalls that, again, both that I was taught to avoid in terms of active listening and you were taught to avoid in terms of holding space, which are do not make the conversation about you.
Correct.
Do not shut down the conversation. Do not shy away from strong feelings.
Hard. All hard things to do. So let's keep going.
Because our instinct in life, because we are wildly narcissistic, is to make it all about ourselves. Because on the one hand, we're like, well, I can help by bringing up this relevant personal experience, but really it's just saying me.
Which, by the way, you build an empire on being like the greatest podcaster, the greatest presenter, the great whatever. Like, you're awesome. However, you do have this skill. I 100% know you have this skill. So keep going.
The skill to listen to people and not make it about myself.
Yeah,
or
you
the
do.
Skill to make it about myself.
No.
I have both.
It depends on who's paying and what they're paying for.
Absolutely. They can pay for either. I will be responsive to incentive.
I think the fees are better for the former than they are for the latter. Right?
I think that does tend to be true.
Yeah. Anyway, keep going. All
right. And then finally, empathizing.
Okay.
And it says not just hearing what the other person says, but understanding their perspective and feelings, noticing their tone, body language, and emotions, imagine how the other person may be feeling, and express that understanding. Now, again, the key thing is always empathy and sympathy are different. Sympathy is expressing, oh, I'm sorry for you, and I really feel for you. And empathy is like, I understand how you feel. Like, those are different.
Yes. It's very different. It's very difficult to say, I understand how you feel, and just leave it there.
Yeah.
As opposed to, I understand how you feel because this one time I blah, 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 right? Then you bring it right
back. Because this one time at band camp?
Okay, I'm not sure how you've broken out your demographic, but if you've seen American Pie, You Are One of Us. If you haven't, go check it out. Anyway, so right.
It would be a classic movie. People are like, was that during the black and white era or was it in color? It's like, it was in color. It was in
right.
color.
I almost said American Beauty, but anyways, American Pie. So you're right. So it has four elements. And you know that what's interesting to me? I think, so by the way, like, let's just have a quick little conversation that definitely relates to this.
Yeah.
The number one says be fully present. That's the first three words. When I first heard the word present, I had never heard it before. I'd never heard it before in the concept of being there with someone. Someone said, will you be present? I was like, does that mean I got to buy you a gift? Like, I don't understand. What is present? So I'd never heard that term before. So it was brand new to me. Now, because some people are repelled a little bit, let's be honest.
Yeah.
Some people are repelled a little bit by the spiritual new agey, whatever words.
I am repelled.
I know you are. I know you, a lot of people haven't. I used to think yoga was weird just because of the name. And meditation was weird. And now it's not. So
it's all a question of the Overton window. The Overton window has moved on both of those things, yoga and meditation, quite a bit.
Are you talking about Doug Overton, the great, NBA
yes,
player?
He was a fantastic guard.
What is the Overton window, just so I know?
The Overton window is used to describe the way in which over time, what is considered a normal part of discourse can shift.
Okay, got it.
So the idea of meditation and yoga being for weirdo hippies who smell bad and
right.
wear weird clothes
right.
eventually morphs into being part of the morning routine of Fortune 500 CEOs.
Right, exactly. And by the way, empathy is starting to become a big thing in companies and what have you. But so
they do a terrible job of it, but I'm glad that they're at least trying.
Exactly. When they profess empathy but don't actually operationalize it, it's frustrating. But the thing is that I look at this list, and I say to myself, if you don't have one, the first one, forget about all the others.
Oh yes. It's no good to say, oh, I'm empathetic, but you know, meanwhile,
you're not
I'm
present.
Still actually watching TikToks while I'm listening.
Exactly. 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 And like, let's talk about this for a second of my daughter sharing her feelings with me. Okay. If I'm not present, there's a couple possibilities. She starts talking about her feelings. What's one of the key things, particularly men say about women, women say about men, but it's true with women too. She starts talking about my feelings of a difficult thing, and my first reaction has been in the
fix
past.
It.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I have women friends who I'd speak to, and I'd be talking, they'd be talking about, oh, I wish more men wouldn't try and solve my problems. I will start talking about something sensitive in my feelings, and they will be like, oh my God, I know this course. Have you seen this, you know, this movie? This is exactly what you should do. It's like, I'm just trying to talk about my feelings. So I think what I'd like to just kind of drop into our conversation, this listening that we're talking about, this presence is not a male-female thing.
Very true.
Okay, got it.
Very true. By the way, I want to share with you a little bit, which is not an emotional sharing, but more of a factual sharing.
Okay.
The kind of training that I received in peer counseling, the way it works is you're taught the theory, but then you have to put it into practice because you have to counsel one another, right? You're not allowed to, if you haven't really learned how to counsel yet, counsel people who are actually troubled. You are in fact counseling the other members of the course.
Yeah.
And you also have sessions with the section leaders. These are the student teachers of
okay.
the course, who presumably are more experienced at it. And one of the biggest things you first have to learn is just how to not try to fix the problem.
So hard.
We had a whole term for it, which is premature solutioning, which is if
that's
you
a great way to talk about it.
You have to get all the way through, all the way to the bottom of the feelings. You have to make sure that the person has fully talked themselves out. And far too often, people just feel this compulsion to start fixing. And it's because there's a problem. We are problem solvers. And no, you have to overcome your natural human instinct, even though that instinct is coming from oftentimes a good place.
Yeah.
Because you want to help the person. You feel compassion. But the best way of expressing that compassion is letting them actually share their feelings completely.
In other words, potentially wanting to jump in and take action about something, right? You agree with me?
Yeah.
Okay, good. That's why I can't stand active listening.
But that's the thing. Active listening has nothing to do with taking action.
I'm just saying that is a possibility. But I love it.
But that is interesting because I understand the definition,
right.
I would never think that that's what it meant. I would know it meant the exact opposite of it. But your point is, when people hear a term like active listening, like holding space, they don't right. have the full explanation. And
that's
what
exactly
they get
right.
out of that term may or may not be good. And I felt like I was not getting something good out of holding space. You felt like you were not getting something good out of active listening. And yet, when we went through the complete definition of both, they are the same thing.
They're similar.
They're the same.
They're similar.
They are
They're
the same.
They're similar.
What is the difference? Tell me what the difference is.
Active listening to me focuses.
No, not to you.
Okay.
Active listening as defined by the profession.
I can only speak for the profession in terms of how long that term has been out there and how effective that term has been in actually getting what both of us want. And the fact is, it has failed miserably.
And whereas holding space has revolutionized things
in the
8 years that it's been out there. We are fighting the same battle, my friend.
I know. I may need to either hold space for you, or you need to hold space for me for feelings.
But let's get back to, you were about to explain in your understanding of active listening.
Yeah.
Here's the difference.
Oh yeah. So, for me, when I hear active listening, it's like I have a role. I have an active role in it. And in holding space is I am here.
But there
That's
is,
what it is
an active
I
role.
I am here.
There is an active role. You are helping you do not, in holding space, simply sit there and nod. You are actively helping to elicit the feelings. You're actively helping that person to express themselves.
Mm-hmm.
It is not simply this matter of sitting there and nodding.
It is active. I find some of the very best conversations. And it's an interesting, I was just thinking about this as we were talking, is like, what's the graphical relationship between proximity, importance of relationship, and our ability to actually stay there and be there, and what that brings out in us. And what I'll tell you is, some of the greatest conversations I've had with my daughter, when she's talked about her feelings, I have said almost nothing. And I have just breathed and been there for her. Because like, what I find in these conversations is that they just need an open field to roam. And what I love about the Psychology Today thing, it may be true also for active listening, I don't know if you learned that at Stanford, but it's like, I love the idea that you can do other things. Because sometimes people are not as comfortable to like just sit there and be there. And sometimes like, this is the story I tell. I'll just tell a quick story, Chris. Mm-hmm. So my daughter, I actually heard this from someone else, but I took it further. So my daughter's like a feral cat. What does that mean? So I put a bowl of milk out there that says, I'm ready to listen, be there, hold for your space for you when you're ready. If I try and bring that feral cat to the bowl of milk, it never works. And what that means is, if Zoe's going through something difficult, which is hard because I can usually feel her in my body. I can feel she's going through something difficult. If she's going through something difficult, if I try and force her to talk about it, it does not work. However, I can be talking to her about ordering burritos, which I did when she was in high school. And I said, would you like guacamole in your burrito? And she will suddenly tell me every single thing that's going on in her life. And in that moment, I have to then it's really where I, instead of like, oh, can you just tell me what you want in the burrito? Like, I'm trying to order food. I need to put the phone down, put the phone down, turn to her with presence and give her my complete attention. Or like, we'll be making lunch together and she starts talking about it. And you know what I do? I keep making lunch but I'm
right.
breathing deep and listening. And so for me, I don't like, you could say active listening is because I'm doing something, or does active listening mean I'm not doing something? It's like, no, that's not what it means at all. What it means is they are there to share something. And I do like the way Psychology Today breaks it down. And I think that we do agree on a lot of things. I just don't like that term, and the term has history and hasn't worked. But you know what's interesting, Chris? I mm-hmm. just realized this.
Mm-hmm.
You know why I don't like active listening?
No. Because you just realized it, so I could hardly know.
I actually thought you might figure this out because it's relevant to our conversation previously.
Mm.
I don't like active listening because I think it inhibits adoption of what we want, because it's not proven effective.
So I disagree. I think that, so this is where we disagree. Like this, okay. It's a question of also, again, our own inherent biases.
Right.
I think that we are going to skip to the punchline, which is that,
go ahead.
You know, the reason we don't like these particular terms is because we think that those terms inhibit adoption. Mm-hmm. You believe that active listening inhibits adoption, and maybe it's not the fault of the term. Maybe it's been poisoned by its adoption by corporate HR departments.
Sure. Sure,
I don't
sure,
know
sure,
for sure.
Sure,
because I have not heard them talk about it, but I could see that. I believe that hold space is poisoned because it has spiritual, hippie, new agey vibes. And therefore, most of the people who most need to hear it will not hear it. And we are coming at it basically with the same issue, which is, hey, these terms don't seem to be working. Is there a better way?
Yeah. I mean, we could come up with a term. I know we'd probably do better. But the truth is, like, to me, holding space puts it perfectly. Hold means I am here, I'm present. Space means go where you are, go where you want, I'll be here.
The fact that there are articles written to explain what the hell do people mean when they say holding space indicates that I'm on the right side of this argument.
Wait a minute. Do I need to go to a Google search and search what's the meaning of active listening? How many millions of articles would I come up with that Here's don't mention Chris Yeh?
Let me read the Psychology Today article. Before I becoming a therapist, I had no idea what it meant to hold space for somebody. I'd never heard the term.
But now the term proliferates social media. And most Is other it? Therapists. There you go. There you go, man. And it's what we're really talking about here is a skill set that is, there is a separate article from Daily Beast that's on there that just says, don't tell me you're holding space, just do it and shut up. Like, there is value.
That's a good way of putting it.
That is actually value. And so, because like
the problem is when somebody says hold space, it is not long before they're also going to say, I'm a strong woman.
Like, wait, what the hell does that mean? Based on, I guess, oh, I see what you're saying, because it's typically feminine. Right. Right.
So what happens is things become associated. So these terms, and again, it may not be the fault of the term itself. We shouldn't blame the words. The words have no feelings. The words are just words. But it's a question of who ends up using the words. And so terms like active listening and hold space are colored and take on the tinge of the people who use them. In your case, it's the tinge of the corporate HR people who really don't understand things. In my case, it's the hippies and new age people who, again, don't really understand things, at least according to the way I see the world.
Here's what would be a terrible outcome in my mind. Holding space becomes a corporate buzzword. That would be a terrible outcome.
But it seems like that may be the way it goes.
Why are you ruining my day? Like, we were having such a pleasant conversation, Chris.
I'm trying, you know, Chris. I live in the real world. I predict things, even if they're not the things I want to see happen. I'm like, look, I don't want to see this happen, but it's what's going to happen.
Chris Yeh, New York Times bestseller author. How many times? Two, three, whatever
Just
it is.
Once. Not many once. People think Blitzscaling is a New York Times bestseller. It's not. Mm-hmm. But it has had more influence than most New York Times bestsellers.
Fair enough. So but what you're saying to me is you think that's going to happen. So it's basically like saying before everybody really understands what it means, people are going to say it, which is a term with empathy that I actually agree with. But
right,
the one of the problems that we're really discussing here is who is uncomfortable talking about their feelings. You know what I mean? So it's like, you can call it, you know, you can call it bananas and apples. I don't care what you call it. But if people don't do that effectively, they won't trust you to keep opening up about their feelings. Because what I say about Zoe is that every talk is a part of a lifetime conversation. So she will share with me what she's ready to share with me. And sometimes if I give her enough, that's why I love space. If I give her enough space, she will actually start talking about things that she didn't even know that she was ready to talk about with me, but she feels comfortable doing it.
So here's the thing. And again, I think it's so funny. Like, we caught the pattern in this conversation is we're constantly using the other person's words and nuancing them taking off of them.
Yeah.
In all your conversations with Zoe,
yeah,
did you tell her, now I'm going to hold space for you? Or did you, in the words of that Daily Beast article, just do it and shut the hell up about it?
I don't know that I've ever specifically used that word. However, this is what I'll say.
Yes.
There was this one time where we were having a very big disagreement with each other. We do fight from time to time, which I've told her, if we don't fight, I'm not doing the right job. If you're not mad at me at some point. And it really,
I'm not sure I agree with that statement, but okay.
Wait, what statement?
That if you're not fighting with me, I'm not doing my job.
Well, if you don't, I meant from time to time. Like, we're going to have fights.
How about this? How about this?
Okay.
So if you never disagree with me, then I'm not doing my job properly as a parent.
Well, I don't know that you would say that, Chris, because you expect people to agree with you on everything, right?
Well, if they want to be correct, they should agree with me. But I understand that's not the way the world works.
Unfortunately.
It's amazing to me. There are so many people in my life who will do things that I told them are probably not a good idea, even though they will later admit, I'll say, okay, what percentage of the time would you say I'm right when we have one of these discussions? And if they have been around me for a long time, they'll say, well, 95 to 97%. I'm like, right. So why do you still not just treat that as the baseline answer?
but this is important. I get it, man. Like, I get it with you. But it's important. Like, part of it is you need to sweep all that aside unless someone, because you've told me, like, you actually, I don't know how remember we had the conversation about whether you take cues from somebody. Like, sometimes I'll just say, hey, what do you want? Do you want to talk about this and have me help you think through it and problem solve it? Or do you want me just to, you know, to be here for you? Yes. Like you don't offer advice to someone about this is what they should do without getting some kind of, okay, consent. I got it.
No, it's usually, again, it's not unsolicited advice. People will say, do you think I should do this? And I'll say, no. And here are the reasons why. And then they do it anyways.
But it's actually, like, if you think about it, it's actually a hard thing to not bring to the conversation, but that's actually why you're so great, right? One of the many reasons you're so great, because I personally have had the experience where you're able to set that aside and just listen to me talk about my feelings. So when I was having this conversation, this argument with my daughter, at one point, she kind of yelled. She just said, you're not letting me talk about my feelings.
That must have hurt.
Well, it sort of did, but it immediately snapped me back into the present moment. Like,
that's good.
Everything I was thinking about and all the arguments I was having in my head, I was like, she was probably 10 when she did this, or 11. It was one of the biggest gifts she ever gave me, because
she's,
it was just
a,
like,
remarkably emotionally fluent young lady.
She's
amazing.
She really is. She really is. And it makes me super happy because, you know, the other thing we're talking about here, Chris, is this is about, like, breaking generational trauma.
That's right. Breaking the cycle.
Breaking the cycle. That's why for me, and we have already said we disagree about this, but the greatest generation will be the one that does that at scale. And I think that will have more impact on civilization than anything else we do, because even those big changes you talked about, like, those are important and scary and uncertain and politics and all that kind of stuff. But man, if we can, as a society, open the doors for that kind of stuff, it's really important. So
Clearly, as always, the answer is artificial intelligence.
Well, so here's the other question for you. When is AE going to become a thing?
Artificial emotions?
Yes.
So, you know, interestingly enough, the company Inflection AI has a product called PI, Personal Intelligence. That is, if you will, an AI that's built entirely around holding space or active listening.
I literally saw that tweet today and clicked into that company to see what jobs they have available. And I said, I will do almost anything for that company. I will be an admin assistant just to get in the door of that, because everything they want, of course, is like technical people mostly. But it is like anything that will help people get reps on doing this stuff is important. But what we're both talking about here is, if people don't like, keep it personal. Mm-hmm. When I have made the mistake of doing the things that we've talked about like bringing my, well, I can't believe you're 35 still talking about this. I can't believe that you went back and picked up a drink again or whatever it was when I didn't really understand what was going on. All it does is it shuts people off, not just from me,
but from everyone.
But from everyone.
Yeah.
And so the thing is this concept and this concept of slowly earn trust to open themselves and their heart to another human being is I hate to say this, but it's a skill set. And you just learn it a little bit at a time.
Well, I hate to say it. There's nothing wrong with saying that it's a skill that can be learned. It's far better than having people believe that it is an innate characteristic that they cannot acquire.
That's true. You know what? I actually honestly had this thought the other day that I think I'm going to become a feelings coach. How many feelings coaches do you know? Like, that's it. That's all I do. Feelings. That's it. So
I think you should look up the domain name and see if it's available.
The feeling coach?
Yeah, the feelings coach.
I'll check it out. I'm not sure if I should do that in any kind of situation where people could actually monitor my Google searches, because I'm guessing feeling coach gets a little bit of inappropriateness in it. But anyway,
a groping coach, it's a feeling coach.
The good thing is this is on your podcast, not my podcast, because it's my podcast, I would start taking this down really inappropriate tunnels. But it's Chris, what we're talking about here is it's so hard for both of us, because mm-hmm. we had that whole conversation and it was so beautiful. It really was beautiful. I've had a million beautiful moments with you, but it was so beautiful when you finally realized, because what you had was an instinctive and negative reaction to the term holding space. And when we, at the end of that conversation, because we texted about it, we're going back and forth and having some other conversation, because this is a little different. We've had some different points brought up here today. How did it feel to you when you came to that realization? Just to remind everybody, that realization was what?
The realization was that it was essentially a professional objection, in the sense that I'm a professional storyteller and marketer, mm-hmm. and I felt like the term holding space was holding back the adoption of this skill set of listening empathetically, non-judgmentally, being fully present, all these things that we've talked about today.
Yes.
And that was good, because again, I was so troubled by the fact that I had this negative reaction. Yes. And I couldn't explain it. And yes. that is the thing that was the most disturbing to me, not being able to explain why I was behaving in a certain way.
And so in that conversation, which is never true in our conversations, unless we're joking with each other, in that conversation, if I had been like, you're an idiot, you don't know what you're talking about, you say you know everything and you don't know everything and blah, blah, blah. Like, if I'd been a jerk, you never would have had the experience. I don't think you would have had the experience to like finally get to it. Because as much as I like
it, I'm pretty sure that when someone's a jerk to you, you don't think, now let me try to figure out what good points they're making.
All I'm saying is that's true. That's for sure true. What I'm saying is the nature of our conversations. It's interesting because you and I can talk about a lot of stuff and we already have the horsepower underneath it that we know how to talk about one another's feelings, like, and yes. listen to each other and what have you. And so I just thought it was really poignant. Now, just for the listeners to know, I had said that to him like 5 minutes before that. And then he said, I had this profound realization, whatever. We don't have the actual, it's not recorded. So we don't 100% know.
And I believe you that you said that.
Yeah.
I think that, again, it's a sign that people's understanding comes in their own time.
Yeah.
That's why when we're holding space or actively listening,
right,
we are not controlling what other people think. We're simply creating the set of circumstances under which they can do that.
And feel what they think and feel.
And think and feel.
Right.
And by the way, the other thing, you know, I want to say this before I forget it, because I think it's a really important point.
Go for it.
The reason why these techniques are so important is because we live in a world where people are told all the time, it's important to be vulnerable. You've probably heard people say that.
Brene Brown, yeah.
Brene Brown, vulnerability, vulnerability. Guess what? If you're vulnerable around people who want to hurt you, that's a bad thing.
Right. They will hurt you. They will hurt you. You're right.
You should be vulnerable in an environment where you are safe to express that vulnerability. And these techniques help create that kind of environment.
Yeah, it's so complex what you're bringing up. Because we both agree that the percentage of people who know how to talk about their feelings and know how to listen to them is low. And so it's just maybe stuff like that inflection is going to help. But
I've got to try it out, Tim. You got to create an account and start playing with it. I want to hear your opinion of it.
I will. And I think the other thing maybe we can talk about is you're old. I mean, I'm old. We're both old.
You're That's old. Okay. Fine. We're both old.
So it might be that the younger generation is going to is perhaps more likely to gravitate towards this term. It's possible. What I do know is the younger generation is increasingly more comfortable talking about their feelings. I think there's no way to dispute that.
Absolutely.
And all of these things that you're mentioning is like, it's all part of the puzzle. And the challenge is that where does the change really start, grab a hold of things, and where does it really go? Because the funny thing is holding space, here's where I agree with you. Holding space can actually be weaponized.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like suddenly there's this division between people who can hold space and don't hold space. And so I do see that sort of new agey culty thing, but I just go back to the thing. It's like, the first time I heard, we talked about this. The first time I heard the word sushi, I didn't eat it just because it was called sushi. And of course I thought that's raw fish. Of course you corrected me on that, right?
Right. Sushi actually refers to the rice, but we generally think of it as the raw fish.
Correct. And now I eat sushi a lot and it's just normal. Things become normalized. And so,
things become normalized. And that's why you shouldn't, and not that I think that you are doing this, but you shouldn't criticize yourself too strongly for experiences like that, because you grew up in a different world say Zoe did.
That's true.
You grew up in the Midwest of the United States in an earlier era.
Right.
I grew up in California, which is a little closer to the future and the present day than the rest of the country, but still in an earlier era where things were very different. And so we grew up in a very different America than our kids are growing up in today.
100%.
The America they're growing up in today is much more pluralistic, much more diverse, much more open. And
distributed,
as a result, they have advantages we didn't have.
That's true. That's true. It's also why I think holding space won't hold back the adoption.
I certainly hope you're right.
Mentally and emotionally pliable.
They like to say that things slap or that they're bangers. So, who am I to criticize their word choice?
My daughter, probably 2 years ago, she's like, oh my God, that's dope. I'm like, that is dope. We said dope like 20 years ago. Dope was us 20 years ago. She didn't want to. But no, I mean, Chris, what we're really, you always are great about putting pin on things unless you want to keep going around it. But it's like, I will share one thing about my feelings, which this is challenging for me. I get into despair at times of the number of people in this world that are just like holding emotions and they have absolutely zero space, whatever. They don't have active listeners in their life. They don't have people who hold space in their life. They don't even have the people who have the inclination to actually, it really starts to get me worked up. Inclination to do something about it. Because you know what, Chris? I mean, just this is an underlying thing for me. In order for me to actually active listen or hold space, I had to work on my own issues. Now, you happen to be one of the very few people in my life who doesn't have a whole lot of things to work out. And by the way, that, like, we didn't even mention this. This started from you watching an episode of Couples Therapy on Showtime.
Amazing television show.
Amazing. So if you don't know Couples Therapy, you actually, it's not like, oh, let's write a script about couples therapy. Not at all. You actually get to go into the room with like four different couples over the course of 8 or 9 episodes, and you get snippets of the conversation with a therapist. And then you also get to see the therapist talking to either their group or that person's coach or whatever they're called. And there was a scene in it where a woman was holding a lot of stuff inside.
Yeah.
And she was, every one of the relationships, it's not like they come in and go, everything's going great. Every one of the relationships.
No, they're there for a reason.
They're there for a reason. And these two particular people were there, and they had very different personalities, and there had been infidelity on both sides and losses of babies and an abort, like a lot of stuff. And she just broke down at one point and let everything out and probably said things and felt things that she never had to her husband, who seemed to love her and actually ended up being okay. Yeah. And she said, I wanted someone to hold space. That's really where this started. And I just despair at times. I do have hope for the younger generations, and I just despair at times that there's so many people out there that don't have that available. And I think a lot of it has to do, at least with me, until I did, because I haven't always been the space holder dude. I'm always good at conversations and listen to feelings, but I had to solve things and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But if someone's, so like 15 years ago, if someone's talking about their relationship with one of their parents, and I had some challenging relationship with my parents, I get sucked into it. It wasn't until I did some work, a lot of work, that I was able to do that. Now, you didn't have that same situation, but we're both at the same point. So I don't know what you feel, but I feel like a great amount of despair about it. I have to be very careful with myself not to go too far down that hole.
Well, it should come as no surprise that I'm going to try to leave us with a message of hope, because that is absolutely something that I believe in.
Yes,
and
please
as
do.
You pointed out, I generally don't have too many things to work through, something that I thank my parents for all the time. Yeah, it's like,
awesome.
I'm so fortunate to grow up without too many traumas. I don't know if you remember this, when I went on television on Mental Samurai, the game show, the producers were like, hey, you got any like traumas, things to overcome that you can come up with? And I'm like, okay, I haven't got much. There were some bullies in school. Is that going to do it? And we went over it, and they just ended up like, yeah, we just can't use that. There's not enough there. I'm like, I'm sorry, guys. I wish I could help you. I really feel badly. I really feel badly that I don't have something to go with here. But really, that's all I got.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, again, the good news is they were like, well, you're still a good competitor and you're still entertaining, so you know, we're going to let you go forward. Anyways, in terms of putting on a hopeful note for all of us, the fact is that each generation has improved in this regard, at least in sort of America. If we think back to the fact that we had a generation known as the silent generation.
Right.
Because they believed it was so important to never speak of anything. If we think about the fact that, you know, even 20, 30 years ago, the concept of mental wellness, mental health was so stigmatized.
It totally
that
stigmatized.
People would hide the fact that they'd seen a therapist. The fact that there would be a television show called Couples Therapy, where people are happy to show their faces as opposed to being, you know, fuzzed out as if they were in witness
like
protection.
Like an FBI informant.
Is an indication of the progress that we're making.
Yes.
And, you know, our society is more open. It's more accepting. You can ask members from all these different groups, whether you happen to be homosexual or transgender or what have you, and to look back 40 years and say, what was it like then? So we 100%. Are making progress. The arc of time is long, but it arcs towards justice, as they say. Things are improving. And I think, putting in a quick plug, that technology such as inflection and personal intelligence and other things like that will help us
I
help
agree.
Us amplify the vast undersupply of human professionals that we have.
Yes. Yes.
You've been helped by human professionals. I receive training from human professionals.
Yes.
But most people don't have that opportunity. That's why so few people have the fluency. It's not something that we were born with per se, although you have some inclinations in that direction.
Definitely.
It's something that we learned. And definitely it was something that I learned. It was not something that was necessarily natural to me, because just looking at the world from my own perspective, I didn't have a lot of sympathy for others, because I hadn't gone through a lot of suffering to understand what it was like.
Yes.
And so I had to learn this through technique, through practice. And I think that the ability of technology to scale that up is the thing that will allow future generations to go even further. But you know what? Even people who are old, like you and I, or even older, could still benefit, could still learn. It's never too late to learn. You may have seen this viral video that went out just the other day. Dick Van Dyke learning to play the ukulele at age 99, saying you're never too old to learn.
That's beautiful. And I, you know, can I just say one thing before we say goodbye?
Yes.
For the listeners, Chris is not trying to drag me out of a hole that I get into every once in a while, because there's hope and despair and there's hope and hope. That is why we are so incredibly connected. And I love the way you brought it all together.
Thank you so much, Tim. And thank you for indulging me in a little bit of a strange conversation. But I think one that, even if it's sometimes frustrating for people to listen to, addresses the core underlying fact, which is that this is something that's really important. It's something that we feel strongly about. It's something that we hope this conversation helps other people become curious about, learn about, pick up a new tip or pointer, whatever the case may be. You don't have to call it active listening. You don't have to call it holding space.
Nope.
But if you listen empathetically, non-judgmentally, if you give people your full attention, and you do that for the people that matter to you in your life, then you're helping make the world a better place.
Even if you start out small. You know what? There's one more thing I do want to say to you. I love you.
I love you too,
Tim. I love you. I love you. Thanks for having me on.
My pleasure. And thank you guys for listening to this special edition of the Chris Yeh podcast. If you really love this, you want more content on holding space, active listening, then please do let your friends know. I know there's folks who listen to this primarily for the business content. Hopefully you guys got something out of a bit more unusual content. But you know, if there's other things that you want to hear about, if there's other topics you particularly want Tim and I to talk about in the future, you know where to reach us.
Yes.
Thank you so much, and we will talk to you again soon.